Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for listening. It's just been an incredible week, like a tornado of major stories, along with the 2024 political environment, the illegal immigration that's happening, how it's affecting every major city, the crime that's running over, the bipartisan deal that fell apart, the new one that's taking shape. There is so much happening. And let's bring in Governor Chris Christie to discuss it. In case you do not know, yesterday Robert Hur came out with his report. After months of speculation and very little leaks, it turns out the only reason it seems that Joe Biden is not being prosecuted for his misuse of classified documents is because he doesn't have the mental capacity to stand trial and be too sympathetic to a possible jury. Chris Christie, you've been in so many court cases, got this rich legal background, former governor of New Jersey, author of a brand new book called What Would Reagan Do? Life Lessons from the Last Great President. Governor, welcome back. What are your thoughts about what took place yesterday afternoon?
Well, look, I think it's a public confirmation from objective people of what we all see publicly, which is that Joe Biden has been declining, is in decline mentally. And there's no doubt I can tell you, as someone who did this work for 7 years as the U.S. attorney in New Jersey, that how a potential defendant will come off as a witness is absolutely an important consideration on whether you bring a prosecution and think you can prove to a jury that someone's guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. And I think there were two problems here that they pointed out. Problem number one, which you just stated very clearly, that this is a crime that requires a knowing act. And that's what they said. I mean, this is even more damning than most people have pointed out, Brian. It's not just his memory. They're saying that back in 2017, they don't think they could definitively prove that back then, 7 years ago, that Joe Biden was capable of a knowing act that he would recall. That's pretty extraordinary. It's not just talking about where his mental capacity sits today. It's tying it back to where his mental capacity may have sat even in 2017.
Yeah, And then secondly,
the fact that Biden, when confronted about the documents, cooperated, turned the documents over immediately, that also shows a level of cooperation that would also make it difficult to convince people that his crime was a knowing crime.
So I was shocked to see in a legal document the words that might have been spun out. Like, sometimes it leaks, according to reports. Robert Hur would have put this in. But I saw it in black and white. He did not remember when he was vice president, forgetting on the first day of the interview when his term ended. When did I stop being vice president? Forgetting the second day on the interview when his first term began. The report says he didn't remember the year that Beau died. He couldn't get within several years of when Beau died. And what you're talking about in 2017 is tapes they listened to of him talking to his ghostwriter, by the way, using classified documents he had no business taking, about an interaction he had with Afghanistan, a letter he wrote to Barack Obama as vice president. And they're saying that in 2017, with his interaction with his ghostwriter, it sounds like he was losing it. So to me, this is so much worse than anything the Biden team could have hoped for.
Well, of course, it's worse than if they would have said they were going to charge him.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. And look, and I think, I hope that for everybody listening out there, it begins to dispense with this idea of a two-tiered system of justice. I mean, Brian, the fact is that you're right. This is the kind of stuff in a two-tiered system of justice that would have just been leaked out and nobody would have known whether they really believed it or didn't, whether it was rumor or not. These prosecutors saw something that they thought was important to the decision they made, and to make sure the public knew why they made those decisions, they put brutal honesty into these documents. This was no, fixed job for Joe Biden. And I think that a lot of people would have expected that out of the Merrick Garland Justice Department. And you hear that from some people in our party regularly. And I hope that I don't care what the politicians think. I care what the public thinks. And I think this should restore, at least in some part, the public's confidence in the fact that there are a lot of good professional prosecutors who, when the truth needs to be told, will tell it. Because those are the prosecutors that I worked with when I was in the Justice Department.
A couple of things, Governor. So really, you're saying if justice is equal, the reason why Trump is being charged is because he hasn't lost his memory?
I think that's part of it. And I think the other piece I told you is important, too. If the facts alleged by Jack Smith are correct, and I think they are, that Donald Trump actively fought returning the documents, actively instructed others to obstruct subpoenas, that's a much different circumstance than someone who, when confronted with it, says, come to a search, take whatever you want to take. We know that Donald Trump has said he didn't want them taking his boxes, that he instructed certain people to hide certain boxes from even his own lawyers. So it's both those things, is that Donald Trump would not be seen as a sympathetic witness because he does not have the same, from the prosecutor's perspective, doesn't have the same memory issues that Joe Biden has. And secondly, Donald Trump obstructed their investigation while Joe Biden cooperated with it.
See, the whole thing of obstruction, you know the legal terms. But if you take classified documents consistently over 40 years, and then you just say, hey, I'm literally going to put them anywhere, in bad boxes, in bad garages, in musty attics. And I'll cooperate if you ever ask me. But I'm not going to say anything unless you ask me. So when they asked him, do you have classified documents? You could check. And the answer is, oh, yeah, you got a lot of them. I mean, isn't that...
Well, and Brian, but I think, Brian, that's why they said right at the first page of the report that they believe that he willingly and knowingly took those documents. And so that's the other thing that was great about the report. They didn't justify Joe Biden's conduct. They said he willingly and knowingly took these. And then they said, but because his memory is so bad, we think it'll make him a sympathetic witness and make it difficult for us to prove what we believe is true, which is that he willingly and knowingly took them. And because he cooperated, that would be another thing that the jury could consider that would make him more sympathetic. It doesn't make Donald Trump's decision to obstruct it justifiable. It just means that Joe Biden gets that benefit because he didn't obstruct. But in the end, I think the important thing for everybody to note is they didn't make an excuse for Joe Biden's conduct. Right up front, in the first sentence of the report, they say, the prosecutors believe that he willingly and knowingly took these documents.
You want to be entertained?
Yeah.
Here is Congressman Dan Goldman, Cut 20.
My understanding as well, Joe, is that during these 5 hours, President Biden went through in great detail many conversations that he had with various other people from years and years ago. So he cherry-picked a couple of examples that perhaps we don't know, perhaps are in context, perhaps are out of context, related to very sensitive issues such as his son, really just to bash him, just to impugn him. And it is
so you
excessive.
Get it. You get what they're doing. This is not spinnable. Yeah. I don't think he knows this is not spinnable, because you know what the answer would be? Do me a favor, release the tapes. Do you think they want those tapes released?
Hell no. And look, the idea to say that they were taking a cheap shot at him when they chose not to prosecute him. I mean, the fact of the matter is, the ultimate cheap shot in this context would have been to prosecute him. They didn't. They made an objective decision. But an objective decision has to include the truth. And the truth is that when you can't remember when your term started, you can't remember when your term ended, you can't remember the date of your son's passing, that those were relevant to the decision not to prosecute, so they have to be put in the report if you're going to be a fair prosecutor.
So the thing that really matters most, so one, we're looking back and saying who's prosecuting and, equal justice, I got it. The other thing is he's running a country. It's our country. It's the world's most powerful country. And the Middle East is on fire right now. Our guys are being shot at regularly. And he is evident. We are a number one supplier of Israel. Listen to this exchange. The same press conference, he came back to answer this question. Cut 10.
I'm of the view, as you know, that the conduct of the response in Gaza, in the Gaza Strip, has been over the top. I think that, as you know, initially the president of Mexico, Sisi, did not want to open up the gate to allow humanitarian material to get in.
Okay, you hear him struggling and you heard what he said. The Mexican president, yep. Sisi. So, you know, he didn't say Mubarak. That's a plus. But that is the hottest place in the world right now. He just said what the Saudis have been saying, what all the enemies of Israel are saying, that the attacks on Gaza are over the top. He's never said that publicly before. And then he says Mexican's president. Your response?
Look, I think it shows exactly what the prosecutor was saying, that, in fact, there are real moments where his memory does not serve him well, and as a result doesn't serve the country well. And secondly, it's awful staff work. Look, one of the things you learn as a principal is that when your staff tells you not to go do a press conference when you're angry, as much as you want to go do one, you shouldn't do it. And the other thing that struck me during that press conference yesterday, Brian, was how angry Joe Biden was.
Yep.
And whenever you go out there as a principal with a lot of responsibility and you are answering questions from the media out of anger, it never serves you well, your cause well, or the country well. And I know they felt like they needed to respond to this report,
right?
But they should have waited until he calmed down after reading. And let's face it. He's no dummy. He knows the political implications of what the Justice Department wrote about him yesterday. He was angry about it, and he came out and performed in a way that made matters worse, not better.
So, Governor, what happens? Does Barack Obama come to him and says, you can't win, Rock? You got to throw in the towel? I mean, do you think he continues? He's already turned down the Super Bowl interview. I mean, we've never seen anything like this before. What do you think?
Look, I think it's very problematic for the Democratic Party because now that everyone's waited this long, let's face it, Brian, the primaries can't be used anymore by anybody to accumulate delegates other than Joe Biden. Almost all of the states where in the country are having primaries, the filing deadlines have passed for almost all of them. And so now what you're talking about is if Joe Biden is going to be replaced, it's going to have to happen at the Democratic National Convention in August, as a technical matter. And, you know, imagine, what are they going to do? You know, Kamala Harris is the vice president. I think there are many, if not most, Democrats who believe that would not be a significant improvement over Joe Biden. And so if you want to start looking for people outside of Kamala Harris, how do they pass over Kamala Harris?
I know.
And put someone else in? I think, you know, this is what happens. Look, this is what happens when people don't have the guts to do the right thing, Brian. And so, the right thing was for Joe Biden not to seek re-election. I've said it over and over again publicly that he's passed his sell-by date and that he needed to step aside voluntarily. He didn't do it. And now the Democrats are in a very, very difficult political position.
Do you think?
Go ahead.
Do you think Donald Trump is the next president then?
I don't know, because guess what else we don't know? We don't know what's going to be happening to Donald Trump between now and November. I mean, the fact of the matter is, Brian, after him losing the immunity appeal in the D.C. Circuit, and I do not believe the Supreme Court will take the case. I don't think there's anything in that opinion that is controversial enough to make the Supreme Court have to take the case. I think it's a pretty cut and dry decision. And so that means Donald Trump's going to go on trial for the January 6th events. This spring, probably in May. And we don't know, but I tell you this, it's going to be, as I predicted during the primary, a very ugly trial where it's going to be allies of Donald Trump who are testifying against him. Mark Meadows testifying against him. Members of his campaign team testifying against him. And so what's going to happen when you have two such flawed candidates in Trump and Biden? Is flawed because of their age, flawed because of their personal conduct. there are going to be more surprises between now and November. Right. And I don't think any of us can predict what's going to happen between now and November.
What would Reagan do is the name of your book. What would Reagan recognize? Would Reagan recognize this type of conundrum that both political parties are in right now?
He wouldn't. He wouldn't understand why they were acting the way they're acting, why they won't work with each other on anything, even something as important, universally important as fixing our border situation, universally important as dealing with our debt, universally important as making sure that America remains the strongest power in the world. Ronald Reagan would not understand holding up aid to Ukraine. He wouldn't understand holding up aid to Israel. He wouldn't understand any of that. And I'll tell you what else he wouldn't understand. He wouldn't understand not standing up for the truth. You know, I write in the book, one of the chapters is about when Ronald Reagan stood up to the John Birch Society in the 1960s, which was a very difficult, racially challenged and anti-Semitic group that had a lot of influence in the Republican Party in the mid-1960s. And the only two people who stood up were Ronald Reagan and William F. Buckley. And they did it together, and they changed the direction of our party, and as a result, changed the direction of the country. Ronald Reagan knew that standing up for what was right isn't always easy. But if you want to be a true patriot, it's what you need to do.
All right, go to Amazon. Is it out now?
It is. It was out this Tuesday.
All right.
So you can go out and get it. And I'll tell you this, Brian, it's a book that I think is written in a way that Brian Kilmeade would really like. There are
simple
life lessons in every one of these chapters.
Right. Thank you. I love that stuff. Governor, then we got to have you on television, too. Governor Chris Christie.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it. Congratulations. What
Thank
would Reagan
you,
do? Life lessons from the last great president. Appreciate it. Back in a moment.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. Bottom of the hour, Julian Epstein. He served as chief counsel of the House Judiciary Committee and staff director of the House Oversight Committee for the Democrats, 96 to 2001. He's been laying it out, being very honest, less partisan. He obviously is hoping for Joe Biden to be successful. But his take on the documents that were released last night, the Robert Hur report, I really got to get it, because word is behind the scenes that Democrats are beginning to panic. They don't know how to get rid of Joe. They can't turn to Kamala. But if the polling starts showing them losing to Trump by 10, what do they do then? All right, Brian Kilmeade Show. Then after that, 1-866-408-7669. We'll take your calls. And much more in store.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
President Biden, something the special counsel said in his report is that one of the reasons you were not charged is because, in his description, you are a well-meaning, elderly man with a poor memory.
I'm well-meaning, and I'm an elderly man, and I know what the hell I'm doing. I've been president, and I put this country back on its feet. I don't need his recommendation. That's
How
totally
bad
out.
Is your memory, and can you continue as president?
My memory is so bad, I let you speak. That's
what your memory has gotten worse, Mr. President.
My memory is not good. My memory is fine.
Almost no one believes that. And what he said later in the press conference, mistaking the Egyptian president as a Mexican president, reinforced the worries even his biggest supporter has to have. Julian Epstein served as chief counsel for the House Judiciary Committee and staff director of the House Oversight Committee for Democrats from 96 to 2001. Julian, welcome back. Can you put in perspective what we witnessed yesterday and the report that was released yesterday by Robert Hur?
Yeah, Brian, good morning. Thank you for having me again. It's a pleasure to be with you. And Also, in the introduction, one could mention that I voted for Joe Biden. It was a bad day for Biden yesterday. Special counsel Robert Hur made clear that Biden had engaged in conduct that could be regarded as criminal, namely the removal of classified information, the placement of that classified information for years in unsecured locations in places like his garage, and then the sharing of that information related to that classified information with people, reporters, biographers, and so on. The section of the law that he is being investigated under is the Espionage Act and subsection F, which would create criminal liability if someone engages in that conduct in a way that can be classified as grossly negligent.
Right.
And given that this information was very sensitive and involved issues like Afghanistan and very important foreign affairs matters and was placed in his garage, you have Hunter Biden, who is looking to monetize the name of his father and his father's business as vice president and potentially maybe even earlier a senator. Somebody could classify that as gross and negligent. And so it's serious conduct. It's very, very serious conduct. And if the law is to mean anything, you have to ask yourself, why would the president be getting a pass on that kind of conduct? Now, what Robert Hur, the special counsel, said was, I'm going to give Joe Biden a senior's mulligan on this, namely that the president is under diminished capacity, and we don't think a jury would find him we think a jury might find him as sympathetic given that diminished capacity, and we think that would be a hard case to prosecute. That's an interesting theory about whether
should it be in that report
case or not.
I'm watching other channels, Julian. They say, well, that is somebody is putting their opinion ahead of a legal document. It does not belong in that report. Do you believe it belonged in that report?
Well, it's the argument that the left is making is it is a gratuitous slap at the president in an attempt to do him reputational damage. I think Robert Hur, the special counsel, would argue it was the reason why he declined to prosecute. And if it is the reason, it spells out in the Justice Department regulations that a special counsel in making a recommendation to the attorney general as to whether or not to prosecute shall provide the reasons. If they decline to prosecute, the reason should be provided. So I think at best the left could argue it's a gray area, but I don't think they're going to get anywhere with that argument. I think what the president did last night in coming out and doing the press conference, which I think a lot of his staff said he had to do given how damaging the part about the president's diminished capacity in the report was he sort of did himself a lot of harm. It was not a good night. And I think a lot of people looked at that press conference and said, again, I'm saying this is somebody who voted for Biden and who's been a Democrat all his life.
Right.
I think a lot of people said the emperor's not wearing any clothes. This is on people's minds. It's showing up in the polling. This is not the first time this issue has come up. It's come up through the entirety of Mr. Biden's presidency, referring to a couple years ago, the deceased congresswoman. The other day, the mixing up of the French president Mitterrand, who has passed, as everyone knows, in 1996. Where I assume what the president was talking about was Macron. And then he sort of comes out of the press conference and he's speaking about the situation in Israel. And he says, well, as I've been trying to encourage the president of Mexico when he met Egypt. So I think he did himself a lot of harm and sort of just underscored the point that most voters feel that he doesn't have the mental capacity to be president in a second term. We should be very clear about this. This is not about age. There are plenty of people who are in their 80s who are at the top of their game And you and I could, you know, you and I could probably list a dozen of them. They're at the top of their game. Geraldo Rivera, one of your former colleagues, for example, I think he's 82. He's sharp as a tack. You may agree or disagree with him, but he's very sharp. And there's lots of people in their 80s that are sharp. This is not about age.
Can I read you a quote from the report? It says, Mr. Biden's memory also appeared to have significant limitations, both at the time he spoke to his co-author in 2017, as evidenced by the recorded conversations, and today, as evidenced by his recorded interview with our office. Biden recorded conversation with his co-author from 2017 are often painfully slow, with Biden struggling to remember events and straining at times to read and relay his own notes. In his interview with our office, Biden's memory was worse. He did not remember when he was vice president, forgetting the first day of the interview when his term ended, and forgetting on the second day of the interview when his term began. He did not remember even within several years when his son Beau died. Wow.
Well, let me tell you why it's relevant, again, to the criticism about the left is making that this shouldn't be in the report. I mean, one of the things the special counsel has to do is determine the president's state of mind. And was this activity, the removal of the classified information and then the continued retention, did he have criminal intent? And if the president can't recall sort of just basic events, it's hard for the special counsel to make determinations about the president's state of mind. So that's the first point. The second point is, you know, is this just sort of Washington, you know, beltway chatter that's not significant for any policy or to the national interest of the country? Or is this something that's more serious? You know, the first time this really became very bothersome to me, Brian, was during the disastrous pullout of Afghanistan, which was catastrophic. And the president was asked if all of his senior military advisors agreed that there should be a complete pullout, or whether, as I had advocated at the time, we should leave a skeletal military force in Afghanistan of about 5,000 trainers, people to particularly help with the Afghan Air Force. And the president said all of his senior military staff agreed that there should be a complete pullout. Well, when those senior military staff were asked to testify before Congress, they all testified quite the opposite. They said their views had been, and they had recommended to the president, that they keep a skeletal force of about 3,000 to 5,000. And I think if that had done, you wouldn't have seen Afghanistan fall. I think the government would have maintained.
And no one even talks, Julian, about those three generals, including a secretary of defense, saying the president was wrong. We recommended. We told him this could happen. He said not one told me it could happen. So I'm thinking to himself, he's covering his butt. You're saying you think he might have just a mental lapse.
Well, you don't know, but the mainstream media was unbelievably irresponsible in not following up on that, because that has huge implications for our national security and the situation in the Middle East and near Asia. And so the fact that there is such a disconnect here between what the president believed and what the senior military officials were testifying has huge national security implications. And if the president isn't able to, you know, to take in that information and analyze it, as it seemed, because this was an interview that occurred a month after the pullout.
That's the 25th Amendment. Julian Epstein, that's the 25th Amendment. If you have generals and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff saying, we tell the president he does not remember from conversation to conversation, and judging by this report in 2017, he was also not making much sense. You have an ability. You had no problem turning on Trump. So on everything, and if you didn't do it publicly, you did it privately, and it leaked out in the Washington Post. But you have a guy here pulling out troops out of Afghanistan. He's forgetting your recommendations. You do it anyway, and it's the worst disaster ever. And the billions of equipment we leave behind is now being used in Gaza. So the ripple effects are unbelievable. I want you to hear what he said yesterday about the latest hotspot. Cut 10.
I'm of the view, as you know, that the conduct of the response in the Gaza Strip has been over the top.
First off, he just made major news. He now agrees with the Arab Street that the response has been over the top, even though using Hamas figures to talk about the casualties. So that made news. Now let's listen.
Did not want to open up the gate to allow humanitarian material to get in. I talked to him. I convinced him to open the gate. I talked to Bibi to open the gate on the Israeli side. I've been pushing really hard to get humanitarian assistance into Gaza. There are a lot of innocent people who are starving, a lot of innocent people who are in trouble.
So what we missed there is he came out, we ate through it, maybe we'll cue it up again, where he said, I called the Mexican president, Al-Sisi, instead of the Egyptian president, Al-Sisi. Right. Why would you be calling Mexico in the Middle East?
Yeah, I mean, that is troublesome. And look, I'm not just trying to dump on him. As I said, I voted for him, but I find this stuff very disturbing. I mean, the most disturbing thing about the press conference to me was not not the mistake or the confusion over Mexico versus Egypt, which is very troubling, but the first clip that you played, which is claiming that Israel's response has been over the top. I mean, this is the kind of mixed messaging that is very, very damaging to, in my opinion, to our national security. It is the kind of mixed messaging we've seen on the Israeli matter since the beginning. And it is exactly the kind of thing that gives Hamas and the fascist Nazis that you have in the, I mean, they are as they there is no difference between Hamas and the Nazis of Germany and Adolf Hitler.
Just ask the hostages.
It is the same ideology. It is the same racist 11th century ideology. That it's unbelievable to me that the left, many people on the left, find themselves in the same company with. But the position of the United States has been that Hamas has got to be defeated in an unconditional and clear and resounding way, and they have to be purged from Gaza.
And the president, our number one ally, just had
Our number one ally. Yeah. So if not, they will just reassemble and they will wait for the next October 7th. And if you don't believe me on that, listen to them. They have said it. So the position of the United States is that Hamas has got to be uncategorically defeated and purged. And so when the president says things like, well, the response has been over the top, and what does that mean? Because Hamas has not been defeated and Hamas has not been purged.
Right. So I got you. I'm up against the break real quick. So if he's incompetent and can't continue, who's going to tell him? And then what did the Democratic Party do? What do you think their options are, since Kamala would probably do just as badly from the Democratic perspective as Biden?
Well, this is the problem with groupthink and cowardice and not being willing to say what is obvious. I mean, I think more Democrats should say the president shouldn't be running. I've been saying that for a year. There are plenty of other candidates out there. I don't think it's Gavin Newsom. I think he would be a very weak candidate. But I think there are people like Josh Shapiro in Pennsylvania, the governor of Pennsylvania, who is very strong. He's very centrist. He's been for things like school choice. I think he's a guy who could have mass appeal. There are plenty of people on the bench, but it won't happen until people grow a set and say what needs to be said, which is that the obvious, which people all know, but they don't want to say it publicly or on camera or on the Brian Kilmeade radio show.
That is to say Joe's got to go.
I don't think he should be running. My personal opinion, he should not be running for a second term.
Julian Epstein, thanks so much.
Yep, Brian, pleasure to be with you.
All right, 1-866-408-7669. I know you have a lot to say. You've been listening to a lot. It's coming at you fast and furious. Plus, Super Bowl Sunday around the corner. Don't move.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
General Milley, it's your testimony that you recommended 2,500 troops approximately stay in Afghanistan?
As I've said many times before this committee and other committees, I don't share my personal recommendations to the president, but I can tell you my personal opinion and my assessment if that's what you want.
Yes, please.
Yes, my assessment was... back in the fall of 20, and it remained consistent throughout, that we should keep a steady state of 2,500, and it could bounce up to 3,500, maybe something like that, in order to move toward a negotiated, gated solution.
Did you ever present that assessment personally to President Biden?
I don't discuss exactly what my conversations are with the sitting president in the Oval Office, but I can tell you what my personal opinion was, and I'm okay. always candid.
So think about this. He says under he's got his hand on the Bible. He already destroyed Trump and was the secret source for all these other tell-all books behind the scenes about how crazy Trump is, and called China to tell him we're not going to start a war with you. So Joe Biden comes in and just totally ignores his advice and then says, I never got that advice. Remember what Joe Biden said to George Stephanopoulos.
Your top military advisors warned against withdrawing on this timeline. They wanted you to keep about 2,500 troops.
No, they didn't. It was split. That wasn't true. That wasn't true.
They didn't tell you that they wanted troops to stay?
No, not in terms of whether we were going to get out in a time frame all troops. They didn't argue against that.
So no one told your military advisors did not tell you, no, we should just keep 2,500 troops. It's been a stable situation for the last several years. We can do that. We can continue to do that.
No one said that to me that I can recall.
So that's the point that Ari Fleischer made a couple of days ago. And I thought, well, I was kind of giving him an out there that he just can't physically remember, mentally remember. But after reading this report, after hearing this spoken about and seeing him four times in the last 5 days, from Helmut Kohl ridiculous statement to Mitterrand's statement, to unable to remember the word Hamas, to yesterday confusing the Mexico president and the president of Egypt. Now, maybe the general made the recommendation. He does it anyway. At which time, General Milley, put your hand up and do what you're going to do with Trump. 25th Amendment, baby. I don't want the biggest disaster in American history. Instead, blow up at Abbey Gate. People die.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
All right, from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world, Brian Kilmeade Show. And by the way, if you ever want to get the show anytime, if you have to leave your family of affiliates, you can get the podcast anywhere. You can also listen on the Fox News app. You go on hit listen or watch at the bottom, and you just scroll through Fox Business, Fox News, and then just hit Fox Radio, and you'll see the feed. It's really cool. Josh Krasshauer standing by for the latest news from Washington, and there's a lot. Nate Boyer, a Bronze Star recipient who fought in both Iraq and Afghanistan with the U.S. Special Forces, and former Texas Longhorn and Seattle Seahawk, will be with us and talking about the big game on Sunday. And Dean Phillips will be joining us. I got to get his take. He was one of the first Democrats to come out and go, Joe Biden can't do it anymore. I voted with him every day. I knew him as a candidate. I actually hosted a fundraiser for him. But this guy is shot. And that's what the report says. Big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
It shows that deterrence can achieve results at decreasing illegal immigration. The only reason why it's not happening is because the president of the United States is not enforcing the laws that are already on the books.
And that is Governor Greg Abbott. The border's busted, cities overwhelmed, and there's no end in sight. As it becomes clear, Dems are just as angry as Republicans about what's happening in the South. We discussed the latest actions states are forced to take.
Number two.
I understand the states controlling state elections and state positions. What we are talking about here are national candidates.
I sense a shutout. The Supreme Court hearing of the Colorado Trump ban from the ballot looks like it's about to implode and put all the rest of the state challenges to bed, I hope.
Number one.
Perception is reality, though, when it comes to the voters. This year is an important year, and when he has these moments, and we were talking about this off air, Tony, this is something that is glaring moving into this year.
And to be holding a press conference about your mental acuity and to mix up Egypt and Mexico, Mexico is not even in the conversation. No questions about Mexico. It's not the topic of the press conference. Exactly. It's not a good look.
CBS this morning talking about the president's presser yesterday. More than just a body blow. A better description would be a knockout punch to the head. That's how I described the Robert Hur report detailing Joe Biden's inexcusable, careless way of handling classified material through his career. Criminal charges only withheld because he's too forgetful to show up and too sympathetic for a jury. Josh Krasauer has seen it all as a Fox News Radio political analyst in a veteran of Washington. He's also editor-in-chief of the Jewish Insider. Josh, nobody really expected Robert Hur's report to, number one, I didn't know anyone who thought it was going to result in criminal charges, nor do I know anyone who said he's his memory's too bad and he's too old to actually be anything but sympathetic to a jury. Were you as surprised as most?
Yeah, I mean, look, the line I think we'll be talking about for much of this year on the political campaign trail is elderly man with a poor memory. That line is going to be etched for a long time in the political annals. And if Biden doesn't win re-election, or if he continues to struggle, or doesn't have a vigorous campaign schedule, it's all going to be referenced to that line in the report. And look, last night, I've never seen anything quite like last night, Brian. You had a flurry of headlines based on Robert Hur's line about the president failing to remember when he was vice president, his son's the date his son passed away, a lot of important dates. That really was just – there was a certain point where you just can't spin that away, and they brought the president out to address the concerns, hoping he would show some anger, as he did at one moment during that press conference, but also really showing every bit his age and mixing up the president of Egypt and or saying that the president of Mexico was the president of Egypt. It was not a good look. It only underscored the concerns that a lot of voters, a lot of Democrats, frankly, have about the president's ability to run a full-fledged campaign, show his mental acuity on the campaign trail. And look, this is the big problem for Democrats. If you look at the polls, a lot of his weakness stems from a lot of voters, not just Republicans, but Democrats, independents, concerned that he's just not up for another 4 years in office. And that's the elephant in the room, and we saw that elephant loud and clear last night.
All right, here's some of the exchanges. And the first one, you'll recognize Peter Ducey's voice, but you'll be shocked to know the next one is CNN. Cut one.
President Biden, something the special counsel said in his report is that one of the reasons you were not charged is because, in his description, you are a well-meaning elderly man with a poor memory.
I'm well-meaning, and I'm an elderly man, and I know what the hell I'm doing. I've been president. I put this country back on its feet. I don't need his recommendation.
That's totally out. How bad is your memory, and can you continue as president?
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Your memory has gotten worse, Mr. President.
My memory is not good. My memory is fine.
For months, when you were asked about your age, you would respond with the words, "Watch me." Watch many me. American people have been watching, and they have expressed concerns about your age.
That is your judgment. That is not the judgment of the press.
They express concerns about your mental acuity. They say that you are too old. Mr. President, in December, you told me that you believe there are many other Democrats who could defeat Donald Trump. So why does it have to be you now? What is your answer to that question?
I'm the most qualified person in this country to be president of the United States and finish the job I started.
So that was CNN. Somebody at CNN executive said, go for it, because they haven't acted like that for 3.5 years since Donald Trump left. That was every day with Trump. So what is your take? Go inside between the lines on this.
Well, look, I think the MO from the White House's point of view was to show the president's anger. And he mentioned in his kind of monologue that he was angry that how dare Robert Hur talk about his son's passing and him forgetting about that. And how dare he suggest that he didn't know when his son died. Like, he was, you know, and that may have been the most effective in what was an embarrassing performance. But when he had to deal with questions from the press, and it was, you're right, it was everyone. It was CNN. It was NBC. Every network was grilling him. And he just, you know, he was like, he's kind of, it's almost like talking to like your 85-year-old grandfather when you're saying you can't drive anymore, I need to take away the keys, and just showing a certain, you know, just unchecked, just really being upset and not really doing it in a focused or strategic way. I don't think he'd helped himself at all politically, probably hurt himself because he's only underscoring the concerns that a lot of voters have about his age. And then, you know, he ended up mixing up the names of the – he was talking about Gaza and Middle East policy, and he ends up citing the president of Mexico somehow in the remarks later on in that press conference. So, look, it was not a good night. I don't know what the White House could have done. They don't have – it's not about spin. I mean, I think a lot of people in the White House think that they can kind of spin this away or have a clever response or kind of a clever argument to kind of diminish the factor that age is playing in this race. But, look, the fact that you don't even put the president in front of tens of millions of viewers before the Super Bowl. I mean, in our fragmented media culture, Brian, there's rarely as good of an opportunity to get the president in front of a generally a friendly interview right before the Super Bowl to reset your agenda, to get your message out there. But the fact that his own handlers didn't want to do that shows how worried they are about his age and how he looks in front of the camera.
And there's a few things. It could have been they knew the Herb report was coming out. And they said every question is going to be about that. It evidently was handed to them Monday. Or number two is they just don't want him in front of anybody because they'd rather use surrogates along the way and let Trump be the story when his trials kick in. But listen to Jeffrey Toobin. I know. I didn't think he was still on CNN either. Cut 15.
Mexico? Where did that come from? I mean, that's the only thing anyone's going to remember from this. He was exonerated here. And I think it's an easy call that he was exonerated. And I think legally, he's never had a problem with this because the issue of criminal intent was quite clearly absent in the Biden case and certainly according to the accusations in the Jack Smith indictment is very much present in the Trump case. I think they are very different. And
so a couple of things. I mean, obviously not many people are paying for Jeffrey Toobin's insights, but obviously he comes back to the microphone and he says the president of Mexico is El Sisi in a time in which the whole world's watching what's happening in Gaza. He can't even talk about the countries in the region. Number two is he's totally wrong. I mean, for 40 years, Joe Biden was haphazardly. They went through 7 million documents. They found things back in 2009, 2017. He took these documents to help write his book. He haphazardly threw them all over his house, through the Penn Center, through his garage and his attic. I mean, one of these – listen, you've seen the pictures. Investigators found documents in his home in a box in a garage near a collapsed dog crate, a dog bed, a Zappos box, an empty bucket, a broken lamp wrapped with duct tape, potting soil, and synthetic firewood. This guy couldn't care less about classified documents, but he blames his staff.
Yeah, Brian, if the age factor was not an issue, you would still have this under normal circumstances would be a scandal about the president misrepresenting what was in the report. I mean, he's not facing legal penalty, but he was clearly not exonerated, even though he said he was. And he clearly contradicted the substance of what the report actually said. So if this was like a normal, political cycle where age was not the driving issue, that would be the story we'd all be talking about. The president is lying and not being accurate about what the special counsel actually said. Yes, it's good news. I mean, not being indicted, good news. Like that's certainly a relief for the president. But this was a damning report, not just because of the remarks about his age and the interviews he did in the context of answering the special counsel's questions, but it was also really, really damning in how sloppy he handled these documents. And frankly, the reason he wasn't charged is because of his age, because they wondered whether he was really fully with
so
really knew that would be able to be a sympathetic witness if it came to a trial.
All right, so Josh, where does he go? What happens from here?
Well, look, the time to make any change. I mean, if you talk about the politics and what happens with the, I mean, look, I talked to a lot of folks at the White House during the press conference last night, and they're spinning this as much as they're all on message. They thought this was great. This was showing a vibrant, rigorous president on stage. So I don't see them changing course unless the president himself. I do not see. At least not anytime soon, any change of course. They are sticking to their script. They are on message. And I think it's because of the president. The president is – you saw him last night, Brian. He was insistent that he is full steam ahead with this reelection. And I think it's going to be very hard to convince – look, they don't have any other good options, right? I mean, we see polls show the vice president has even worse approval ratings, lower approval, higher disapproval than the president. And, we're at the point in the cycle that you just really can't do much else. So I think they're kind of stuck with the situation that they kind of made for themselves. The time to make any changes on the ticket, replace the vice president, do those things would have been when we were talking about this last year. This shouldn't have been a secret that, you know, the president was going to be 82 years old in the reelection year. But they kind of punted, kicked that can down the road, avoided the questions, wanted to, you know, avoid dealing with the inevitable, and now they're really, really dealing with it in a very tough way.
Yeah, it's incredible. I just don't think that he could possibly run. I mean, I don't know how he backs out. And it was been brought up to me the way to do it is, you know, when they have Nixon back out. I remember reading about Barry Goldwater's book, going into Nixon as a staunch Republican, big conservative, and saying, "Listen, you're done. You've lost support. You're going to have to resign, or you're going to get impeached. You don't have the votes." And he left. Who could have that conversation with Joe Biden?
Yeah, very few people. This is a very staff-driven White House. And look, I think a lot of, from a pure realpolitik point of view, a lot of the cabinet secretaries, the top officials have a lot of power in the setup where Biden does delegate quite a bit and his hours are limited, as we know from the reporting out there. So, you know, I don't think there's anyone other than Jill Biden. I think his wife would probably be the person who would get in that close counsel.
I'll give you a scenario. If Barack Obama goes on television and says, "I'm concerned that, you know, I'm reading that report, talking to Joe, I'm concerned that he can't do the job anymore."
Yeah, that would just totally. I mean, the reason that there aren't any good options is if that happened, that would just blow apart the Democratic Party. It would probably mean Kamala Harris, a wounded Kamala Harris, would be, you know, the heir apparent. And I don't think the Democratic Party and their reelection or their election chances would be any better in that scenario. So it's a no-win situation no matter what plays out. I do still think that Biden is more likely than not going to be on the ballot in November.
Yeah. Also, this is the Joe Biden who, you know, mental capacity alone, just the judgment of using pseudonames on emails, of taking classified documents home, writing in the margins. Do you know some of the documents he took home have human intelligence on them, of locations of our agents in Pakistan and Afghanistan? I mean, are we just supposed to say that's a terrible staff you've had for 40 years?
Yeah,
I mean, yeah. Come on. I mean, this is I just think that there. I feel like this is a turning point on the whole thing, and I think Trump being measured is probably his best thing. Let Joe Biden be the story. Don't give him an out. Don't say anything crazy.
Yeah, and Trump did respond, and he said this is about a two-tier. He actually, yeah, instead of letting the complaint sit for itself, he said this is a two-tiered system of justice and really put himself in the story. But look, the picture's worth a thousand words. Anyone who watched the press conference or even saw video clips of last night, they're going to draw the same conclusion that the special counsel did in terms of his age and his, you know, showing every bit of it in person.
Game on. If those polls show Trump up by 10, we'll see. Real quick on the Gaza situation, the president coming out and saying, "But I guess you know that I believe that Israel's been over the top in Gaza." That is a damaging statement.
Yeah, it comes the same day that the president sent a bunch of officials to Dearborn, Michigan, which the Wall Street Journal called the famous editorial last weekend, the jihad capital of the country. And they try to appease and pander to an anti-Israel group of people who are very, very upset with what's going on in terms of Israel's fight against Hamas. Look, the notion that you can kind of triangulate or kind of, you know, pander to a very radical or very left-wing group and benefit from that politically, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I mean, I think the smart political strategy is do what you've been doing all along,
yes,
which is support Israel and let them get Hamas's leadership and end the war.
Josh,
it's going to be a mess.
Absolutely. Josh Krasher, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Our best ally. We just threw him out in the street. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
A grand jury has returned an indictment on seven individuals for their roles in assault on two police officers in Times Square on January 27th. This assault, as it did to many of you, sickened me and outraged me. We all rely on members of the NYPD every day, as I said, to keep us safe and to keep this the safest big city in America. As a lifelong New Yorker, I do not tolerate attacks on our police officers, and certainly I do not as Manhattan district attorney. So let me be clear, plain and simple, the behavior depicted, many of you have seen.
All right, but that is Alvin Bragg boring you to death and also insincerely saying he's outraged. If he was sincerely outraged, why did he let his minions, his department, let two of those assailants, and now there's up to seven, beat up those cops on full view, multiple angles, and bring them in and then let them go? Now you have a grand jury that says let's indict him. In Nassau County, they had a different approach. They had an anti-Semitic attack, someone ripping off an Israeli flag. The illegal immigrant, still in jail, $50,000 bail. Same state, different philosophy because a different ideology.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I think the most important thing was that he's playing against Patrick Mahomes. And last week after the game, Brock Purdy said, I'm not the biggest, I'm not the fastest, I'm not the strongest. And so, like, I told him, lean into that. Your superpower is processing. Do not get caught into watching some Superman across the field do something that is not your game. Don't be drawn into a game that's not yours. Play your game, right? It's an efficiency game. It's getting the ball in and out of the huddle, call the play, let Kyle call his cool play, and then you go run it, get to one of these great players in space, and then put the pressure on that defense continuously as they try to come up with concoct ways to cause you some grief. So to me, Brock Purdy, just be who you are. Use your superpower in processing. Do not watch Patrick Mahomes. Even look down. Like, just look away. Do not watch anything he does.
Yeah, how great is that? Steve Young, fantastic advice. Not only was a great quarterback, started the USFL with the LA team, Express, if I remember correctly. And then he goes over to Tampa, gets killed. Then is a backup for years because he had no offense line. Then he goes a backup for years for Montana and then has a fantastic Hall of Fame career with San Francisco. And he knows what it's like in the big game because he's actually won one and he's been there and watched Joe Montana do it. Talking about Brock Purdy, one of the great stories in sports, any sport, by the way, when you are the last player taken and you end up being so good. Nate Boyer is a Bronze Star recipient. He also played for the Seahawks and played at Texas. He also fought in both Iraq and Afghanistan. He does not mind physical contact. And analysis, and also bleeds red, white, and blue. Nate Boyer, welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it, brother.
Hey, first off, I got to ask you, just what do you think is going to happen on Sunday?
Well, I grew up in the East Bay, so I grew up a Steve Young fan and a Joe Montana fan and Ronnie Lott and Jerry Rice and Roger Craig, all those legends. So, I mean, what I think is going to happen is Patrick Mahomes is going to give us hell for the entire game, but somehow, some way, it's our time. The Niners are going to win.
So Niners are going to win. Joe Montana said. Cut 52.
I'm not sure what they're talking about. The guy's playing pretty good football. Everybody's still doubting him, and I just think that he understands this offense. He understands the people around him. And the things he doesn't force balls, he doesn't have to. But you can always tell when a guy is comfortable in an offense when he's playing like Brock's playing. And the one thing I always say, that don't second-guess him, second-guess the draft. I mean, he's proof, Brady's proof. They haven't figured out how to draft, right? What's important, what isn't important, because you just don't know who's going to make that transition.
Case in point, you got Zach Taylor with the – and seems like a nice guy with the Jets, and he's just gotten so many chances, and he just can't do the job. Brock Purdy gets one chance in the most, they say, the most complex offense in the NFL, and he shines. How do you explain that?
I can't explain that. I mean, honestly, obviously Joe Montana and Steve Young are subject matter experts when it comes to throwing that pigskin. I think it's just, look at the age of these guys too, because the same thing happens from high school to college. Like you look at the 4-star and 5-star recruits, and probably more often than not, people are generally right. But at the same time, like there's these stories of guys have walked on. Baker Mayfield's one of them. You know, he walked on at Texas Tech and then had to walk on again at Oklahoma when he transferred. He wasn't given a scholarship right away. And then he wins a Heisman Trophy. And I don't, it's just something about certain people in those, I think in those pressure situations, as the stage gets bigger, they just play bigger and you don't know until you're there. You know, you can't know until they have that opportunity. And then vice versa, you know, I mean, people do the exact opposite too. It's like they can have all the stats, all the numbers, all the measurables, and you don't know until there's 102,000 people in the stands and it's like the game's on the line. Are they going to have that precision or is it going to just affect them that much and they're just not going to play at the same level?
So, Nate, it wasn't too long ago when you're meeting with Kaepernick. We're talking about is it okay to take a knee before a game. What was that like for you, and where do you think the game is at now in the country?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was definitely a very interesting, volatile time. I mean, from where I, you know, from where I stood, like, look, I played in one NFL game with Seattle, and in college, you know, I played all these years at Texas, and you're not in the locker, you're in the locker room when the anthem's playing. You're not out on the field when that's happening. So I didn't really have that opportunity. And then the one game I played in Seattle, I was on the sideline when the anthem played, and I cried because it was a really emotional time for me. And I thought about my best friend who'd passed away a few years prior. And I just was, you know, I was proud to have that chance and to me, those symbols are very special because of my 10 years in the military. But at the same time, like, you know, Colin Kaepernick had a different experience and different story. And, you know, I will say that, What I fought for, what we all fought for, is the right to protest. Is the right, is the First Amendment right to express your opinions in that way. But at the same time, like it also was, it was hard for you know, a lot of people to see and to feel. So like, it's just one of those things. Like you know what you know, and your experiences sort of shape your beliefs and opinions and all that. And when we did meet and we did have a conversation. You know, it was a good conversation. It was positive and it was respectful and all that. And he had a lot of respect for the military, you know? So I do want to note that, like, there's a lot of people that didn't see that side of things. But at the same time, like there's just so many other factors into something like that. And especially around that time.
Fundamentally, and you live in this, like, you got to agree, you love the country. And then to talk about how to make it better rather than think the country is not living up to your standards. So I'm thinking to myself, you know, travel. If the country's not living up to your standards, try another, travel, and if you see someone better, stay. If not, come back and make it better. Taking a knee never made it better for me, but I don't want to bring up that conversation with you. Nate, you're doing a great thing, merging vets and players. MVP was founded in 2015 by Jay Glazer and you, one of the great guys you'll ever meet in sports and out of sports. Tell me about it and tell me why it works.
Yeah, so we bring together at MVP, we bring together combat vets and former professional athletes, and we help them find purpose and identity when the uniform comes off. And, you know, a lot of people, including myself, when you first think about, like, well, combat vets and pro athletes, like, they don't have a lot in common. I mean, you know, what they're doing, playing sports and going to war are very different things. The battlefield and the ball field are very different places, but at the same time, like, there is a lot of similarities in the structure, in the identity with the uniform, in the camaraderie, and the loss of those things when you get cut, you know, when sports is over. And also, like, vets and athletes by and large, they kind of look up to each other. There's that mutual respect.
Yep.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, when I was deployed, I remember watching football games to kind of help me escape, you know what I mean? It was something that was just inspiring to me to watch, you know, and hear stories of people like Pat Tillman, you know, that gave that all up to join the military. Like, there's a lot of inspiration kind of drawn from both those groups, and you're pretty young when it ends. So that's what we're doing. We're just kind of bringing those groups together, and we're helping one another, you know, push to the next level again and find that greatness once again and feeling like, you know, your greatest moment wasn't in the past, it's ahead of you, and you can still do a lot of great things. And, you know, we need good leaders in our country, and I think vets and athletes You know, they have that platform. They have people that do respect them and look up to them, and they have the potential to kind of dig us out of some of these dark times. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. So the MVB Gala at the Star in Dallas, it'll be on April 13th. You can go get tickets at vetsandplayers.org/MVP-Gala-2024. So just look at MVP Gala the Star, and it'll get to it, and order tickets and be a part of it, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Right. Yeah, our second annual gala at the the Star, for people that don't know, that's Cowboys headquarters. And they've been a really good partner of ours, which is great.
It's a win-win.
Go to Vets and Players. Yeah, go to vetsandplayers.org or look up Emerging Vets and Players gala, and you'll be able to find tickets. And we'd love to have you out there. We'd love to have more support from companies, organizations, individuals around the country.
Nate Boyer, thanks so much. Bronze Star recipient. Appreciate all you do. Thanks, Nate.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Brian.
You got it. Back to politics in a moment. The man that's been saying that Joe Biden's should not be running for president is Dean Phillips. He joins us next in light of this Robert Hur report, which we've been examining, and it is not good for the president.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
In fact, I was so determined to give the special counsel what he needed, I went forward with a five-hour in-person interview over 2 days on October the 8th and 9th of last year, even though Israel had just been attacked by Hamas on the 7th and I was very occupied. It was in the middle of handling an international crisis.
So that is President Biden. An underreported thing. What a terrible judgment. October 7th happens, the worst massacre that happened to the Jewish people since the Holocaust. And he's not blowing off Robert Hur's meeting to focus on trying to maintain some type of world peace or do best they can to support our key ally. Joining us now is Dean Phillips, congressman from Minnesota, running for president of the United States. Congressman, your take on the president's on the Robert Hur report. Mm-hmm.
Well, Brian, good to be with you. I hope, like most Americans, it's sad to see now a former president who is in front of the Supreme Court and facing indictments, and now a current president who clearly mishandled classified documents. And to read the report, as anybody can, and I hope you do, it basically says that he likely committed a crime, but they didn't want to prosecute him because he's a well-meaning elderly man with a fading memory. And reading that as an American is awfully tough for reasons I hope everybody can understand. So I think it's a sad day for America. It's just another reason why I think President Biden should serve out his term and then pass the torch to a new generation of leaders. And I think that's why 70% of the country, Brian, is saying the same thing.
But now they have to listen to you, Congressman. You've been saying that. You say, I vote with him. I had a fundraiser for him. But this is not the same guy.
Yeah. He's a good, Brian, he's a good man. People can differ, of course, have different perspectives on policy. But what really troubles me is that there's a culture in Washington of silence, ignorance, and people so focused on protecting their next reelection that they don't tell Americans the truth. And it's not unique to one side or the other, but I just happen to be the only one saying the quiet part out loud.
Yet,
rest assured,
has anything changed, Congressman? Congressman, has anything changed since this came out?
Sure. I've had my phone is blown up with messages from colleagues, surely on both sides of the aisle. But yes, Democratic colleagues who all know better. I won't name them, of course. But yes, of course, Brian, because anybody who has their eyes open can see what's going on. And I think it's a shame. I think it's embarrassing. And I think it's sad. And I think it's a shame for a president who could cement the legacy, pass the torch, and do what's best for the country. It's not just about him, and that's the problem in our country right now. We have cults of personalities around individuals instead of around principles. And I'm trying to encourage center-right and center-left Americans, Brian, to join together, the exhausted majority, and get our act together because we are increasingly looking like a laughingstock around the world, and I won't have that.
Senator Marco Rubio says said on social media that the special counsel decided not to bring charges against Biden because they believe he has age-related dementia. Is he wrong in making that conclusion?
Well, you know, Brian, neither you nor I are a physician, and if we were, we'd never attended to him, so I can't opine on that. But we all see with our own eyes his speeches and the decline. He's an 81-year-old man, remembering that he would be serving until January of 2029.
Amazing.
If he was reelected, and by the way, you know how I feel about former President Trump, too. I think both men are at a stage in life where neither should be serving in the presidency. Right. I think it's just as simple as that, and I know most Americans feel the same. What I'm troubled by is a political system, a duopoly, Brian, right, that is increasingly only elevating people who are not well appreciated nationally.
But if Donald Trump was 50 years old, but if Donald Trump was 50 years old, you also didn't think he should be president, right?
Well, we have a very, I will say that I have a very unique, I have a very clear perspective on his character, and I think character matters. I have a great affection for a lot of Republican principles, progressive principles. That's not the issue. The issue is people and principle, and unfortunately, what I've seen is quite devoid, but that's my opinion. I know, right, shared by many, but I'm not here to litigate that.
Here's an anonymous quote from a Democratic House member. It is a nightmare. It weakens President Biden electorally, and Donald Trump, sure, would be a disaster and an authoritarian. For Democrats, we are in a grim situation. What I've noticed is the press is coming from CNN. It's coming from CBS. So I'm, yeah, wondering, do you expect more people to speak out and maybe, if not join you, yeah, jump in themselves?
Well, Brian, I did watch some of MSNBC's coverage last night, and not surprisingly, it was all focused on a political hit job, not the merits of the case, not what's in front of people's eyes. And frankly, when millions of people get their news from a single source, that determines what people are seeing. So I hope the answer is yes. If people don't wake up soon, we're going to have a real, real problem, and there is still time. So, right, everybody knows this, Brian. This is like those Air Force pilots that occasionally sight things in the sky that they can't explain. And these are esteemed good people who know what they're doing. And the minute they say they saw something unusual, the country thinks, are you a little off? Well, that's how it's felt like for me for a long time, seeing something, right, so clear, so obvious, surrounded by people who simply want to ignore the truth. And I think we got to fits that fast, because that's, right, a dangerous, dangerous disease.
So here's what this is what CBS had running. This is what they thought about Biden's presser when he named al-Sisi the president, yeah, of Mexico. Cut 16.
Perception is reality, though, yes, mm-hmm, when it comes to the voters. Yeah. This year is an important year. And when he has these moments, and we were talking about this off air, Tony, I mean, this is something that is glaring, yeah, moving into this year.
And to be holding a press conference about your mental acuity and to mix up Egypt and Mexico, Mexico is not even in the conversation. No, exactly, questions about Mexico. It's not the topic of the press conference.
Exactly.
It's not a good look.
No, and it was all about the southern border of Gaza, so he went to Mexico.
Yeah.
Who among us hasn't screwed up those two countries before? But we're not president.
Yeah.
And that's the real concern that they have at the White House that they're going to have to prove.
Oh, please. Southern border of Gaza? Yeah. I always think Mexico. So, I mean, that's a little bit what's going on. But bottom line is, if the polls show Trump up by 10, does something, mm-hmm, change, Dean Phillips?
Well, I've been arguing, Brian, for many months now. Just all you have to do is look at numbers. Look at approval numbers, the lowest in presidential history. President Biden is 20 points below Jimmy Carter in January of 1980. He's 5 points below former President Trump at the same stage. Every poll shows him losing in battlegrounds. I come from the business world, Brian, but I cannot imagine that politicians eventually don't open their eyes to the truth based on the data. It's only going to get worse. I don't think yesterday is going to improve the president's standing. So if Democrats want to win, there's clearly a path. And if Democrats favor losing, it looks like that's the path that's been chosen so far. But I intend to rectify that as much as I possibly can.
How long are you staying in the race?
I'm going to stay, Brian. It is an imperative to stay in the race to the convention. There is no other Democratic candidate running in the primary right now. And as evidenced by yesterday and the past number of days, I think it's important that the United States of America has a 55-year-old, well-meaning candidate with a good memory in the race as well,
right,
as President Biden.
And it's good to know that quality people have had all the success you've had in your life, want to still give back to the country. And as a Democrat, you are now the alternative to Joe Biden. And it looks like the Democrats need an alternative. Congressman Dean Phillips, thanks so much.
Hey, thanks, Brian. Have a great day.
You got it. Brian Kilmeade, Joe. Keep it here.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Final hour of the week here on the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you are there. Shannon Bream is standing by. Not only does she do a great job on Fox News Sunday, she also handles everything legally and stood on the steps of the Supreme Court yesterday for the fascinating oral arguments that we were able to hear. But believe it or not, people were able to see them if they got inside. Marshall Faulk, one of the NFL's greatest running backs, is in Las Vegas. He's going to be joining us to break down the Super Bowl, according to reports, 48 hours away. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
It shows that deterrence can achieve results at decreasing illegal immigration. The only reason why it's not happening is because the president of the United States is not enforcing the laws that are already on the books.
True. And you've done everything to secure your state, Governor Greg Abbott. Border busted, cities overwhelmed, and there's no end in sight. It's become clear Dems are just as angry as Republicans, but not enough to do anything about it. We discussed the latest actions states like Texas are taking.
Number two.
I understand the states controlling state elections and state positions. What we are talking about here are national candidates.
Yes, that is Chief Justice Clarence Thomas. Since a shutout, the Supreme Court hearing on this on Colorado's ability to actually kick Trump off the ballot like they've done is very much in jeopardy. I believe this will be 9-0.
Number one.
Perception is reality, though, when it comes to the voters. This year is an important year, and when he has these moments, and we were talking about this off air, Tony, this is something that is glaring moving into this year.
And to be holding a press conference about your mental acuity and to mix up Egypt and Mexico, Mexico is not even in the conversation. No questions about Mexico. It's not the topic of the press conference. Exactly. It's not a good look.
Yeah, CBS just discovering that maybe the president's lost a step. You think? More than just a body blow. Better described what happened yesterday, a knockout punch to the head for President Biden. That's how I describe Robert Herr's report. What about you? Not only does it say the president's diminished, but he was inexcusably careless in his handling of classified documents over the course of decades. Criminal charges are withheld because he's too old and forgetful to show. Really? How's he going to be president? How is he president? These are some questions that I'm not sure Shannon Bream went to school to answer, but I'm going to ask you anyway. During class, what college did you go to, Liberty?
I went to Liberty undergrad in Florida State Law School.
Did they ever ask you how would you tell us what if the president is cognizantly able to do? Is he cognitively able to do the job? Have they ever gave you a class on that? Did you ever take that as an elective?
I do not recall studying that. I do not.
What do you think we're in the middle of? How unique is Robert Herr's report to you?
You know what? Yesterday, even before we got the Herr report, I was talking to another reporter over at the Supreme Court, and we're like, Washington's just a circus. Like, we're all just playing in it. We're all part animals and sideshow acts and everything else, because it's just gotten crazy here. Then we got the Herr report, and we're like, wow, okay, the day has gotten even crazier. I mean, it's one of those things that obviously is good for the White House in that there's no criminal liability, but man, it pours gasoline onto that fire that all the polling shows, including majority of Democrats, don't think that President Biden is mentally strong enough to do this for another 4 years. That's his own party.
Yeah, here's Chuck Rosenberg on MSNBC. He was trying to break this down for some disbelieving hosts. Cut 19.
Under the special counsel regulations, Herr, the special counsel, has an obligation. He shall write a report. He must write a report. If you're writing a report to the Attorney General of the United States and you're recommending that someone not be prosecuted, which I think is the right recommendation, then you would tell the Attorney General why you think that person ought not be prosecuted. If Rob Herr's assessment was that Mr. Biden was sympathetic or that he had a faulty memory, that is absolutely something you would tell the Attorney General in a confidential report. When the report goes from Herr to the Attorney General, Merrick Garland, it is a confidential report. Then it is up to Merrick Garland whether or not to release it in part or in whole. I think this is a flaw in the special counsel regulations. When I was a prosecutor, if I decided a case was not meritorious, I would close it, the end. I wouldn't talk about it. I would close it. But as a special counsel, you can't do that. You must write the report. So it doesn't make sense to me, Willie, that if I'm telling the Attorney General of the United States why someone ought not be prosecuted, that I wouldn't also tell him exactly why I came to that conclusion.
Right. So your thoughts about him putting it in there? I mean, if he just closed the case and say no criminal behavior, that wouldn't have worked for anybody.
Right, and especially if you did identify that there was some mishandling of documents, then you do have an obligation to explain why you're not going to prosecute what you found was mishandling of classified documents. But, you know, the critics do say he went too far, this feels punitive. You know, Paul Krugman's got a piece out. He calls it disgusting. He says it was snide, unwarranted, and obviously politically motivated and full of slurs. So, you know, I have a feeling Paul Krugman wouldn't feel the same way if it was written around President Trump with the same words. But well, this is Washington.
Right. But if you look at the president, I mean, this didn't come out of left field. I mean, listen to the president just this over the last 2 weeks. Cut 12.
Right after I was elected, I went to what they call a G7 meeting, all the NATO leaders. And it was in the south of England. And I sat down and I said, America's back. And Mitterrand from France looked at me and said,
okay, just too painful. You know, then he came, evidently, until twice he said Helmut Kohl is the one he told that to. And it was Merkel. They don't look anything alike. And I've done a side-by-side. I've been staring at it all morning. And then, of course, there was this 2 weeks ago, cut 13.
By the way, used to make beer brewed here. It is used to make brew beer here. Oh, Earth Rider, thanks for the Great Lakes. I wonder
about that. Earth Rider, thanks for the Great Lakes.
And then last night he has that presser, which I think is designed to go on the attack after the Robert Hur thing, yells at reporters and messes up two more foreign leaders. So not a great week for the president.
But we're stuck in this. He's supposed to be our leader. And then you wonder, you know, we played this back to back. You know, I want you to hear General Milley. This is General Milley testifying about the biggest debacle in my lifetime in Afghanistan. Listen to this.
General Milley, it's your testimony that you recommended 2,500 troops approximately stay in Afghanistan?
As I've said many times before this committee and other committees, I don't share my personal recommendations to the president, but I can tell you my personal opinion and my assessment if that's what you want.
Yes, please.
Yes, my assessment was back in the fall of 20, and it remained consistent throughout, that we should keep a steady state of 2,500, and it could bounce up to 3,500, maybe something like that.
Okay. So that was his recommendation. So listen to George Stephanopoulos.
Your top military advisors warned against withdrawing on this timeline. They wanted you to keep about 2,500 troops.
No, they didn't. It was split. That wasn't true. That wasn't true.
They didn't tell you that they wanted troops to stay?
No, not in terms of whether we were going to get out in a time frame, all troops. They didn't argue against that.
So no one told your military advisors did not tell you, no, we should just keep 2,500 troops. It's been a stable situation for the last several years. We can do that. We can continue to do that.
No, no one said that to me that I can recall.
So either, and at first I thought typical politician, he's trying to cover himself up and throw someone under the bus. The fact is maybe he doesn't even recall. Insists on it. Nobody stands up and speaks up, and people are dead. And we're $80 billion is all around the world of military equipment. I mean, think we might have already paid the price for his diminished capacity.
Well, and that's the thing in this Hur report. It's not just talking about, you know, the fact that he couldn't remember things when they talked to him in October of 2023, but they harken back to his interviews, which there is some recording of interviews with his ghostwriter for a book back in 2017. They said even then he sounded confused and was, you know, unable to recall certain things or mixing certain things up. So there are a lot of pieces to this puzzle. And again, when you poll people and they, from his own party, have serious concerns, people see what's going on. And I thought it was very interesting last night that when he decided to do this presser, of course, Peter Ducey, excellent job as always, jumps right in with the questions. But man, he had a lot of competition because suddenly now it feels like everybody else is awake to this problem that has been there right in front of their faces this whole time. But man, that press corps was aggressive last night, and it's as if they finally realized this is an issue.
So where do they go from here? I mean, they turned down the Super Bowl interview. He has no plans to do any sit-downs. He's already showed in unscripted situations. It only makes things worse. He's got 8.5 months to prove he deserves 4 more years, which we're finding out nobody thinks he does deserve. 75% of the country are concerned about his age and his ability to lead, including about 50% of Democrats. So what happens next, Shannon?
Well, listen, they've got to decide how they're going to manage this and him being out there because, again, you point out the Super Bowl, second year in a row that he said he wouldn't sit down for that. You're running for reelection. That is tens of millions of eyeballs that you could get who are going to listen to whatever message you have. Are they so worried that he can't manage? Those are pre-taped interviews that they can't manage that long enough for him to get through that and to have such a huge audience. The amount of free publicity you would get for anything connected to the Super Bowl is hard to quantify. In an election year, it's just stunning. So they're not going to be able to run this like 2020 when we had the very real concerns and fears and worries and dangers about COVID. He's going to have to be out there. And when he has, you know, these campaign stops that there have been a lot of protesters there. He's walking around drinking smoothies versus the optics of President Trump bringing in, you know, tens of thousands of people in some, you know, arenas and gatherings. Yeah. It's pretty stark. And so the White House is going to have to figure out how in the world that they manage those optics.
It's more than optics. I don't know if he can do it. I think there's going to be serious conversations about whether he continues. I think they have to. I mean, you got to.
I think that's why Gavin Newsom's been running a shadow campaign.
Maybe, but he's a flawed candidate too. I think Kamala Harris is the problem. With her at the top of the ticket, I think she actually has Democrats have less of a chance of winning.
I mean, her approval numbers are worse than the president's, so that is a very big calculation for them. But listen, the president doesn't seem like he's willing to go anywhere. He was very angry last night. He did not appreciate. Yeah. You know, the very pointed questions that were basically quotes from the Hur report.
Well, I was angry, too, because I had to change the restructure of One Nation Saturday at 9 o'clock. And
come on. You don't want to mess with perfection.
Right. But I had to have to change your A block. I thought I'd be.
Sometimes you have to.
Yes. So what are you doing?
Right now?
Nope. Fox News.
Well, we're going to have Senator Tom Cotton with us to talk about, you know, all of the mess here. It looks like Senate may be working this weekend because they never did, you know, pass that border deal. But they're still trying to pass money for Ukraine and Israel. Israel looking like they're beefing up their ground invasion in Gaza. And there are a couple of other things we're waiting to lock in. I don't want to use, you know, President Biden's language when he was VP, but they're a big deal.
I hear you. We are having John Harbaugh on, who had the best team in the regular season, but not the Super Bowl. He's going to be talking about him and his brother back in the NFL together. I am going to also have Dana Perino and Tulsi Gabbard to break this whole thing down for us. And then we'll do a Super Bowl themed news duel with Tommy Lahren. But what about Shannon? Your thoughts about the biggest story during my show yesterday, and that is the Supreme Court and what you gleaned from that. I was encouraged. I'm hearing these clips and seeing people just going for the answer and going to the Constitution, not worried about party. Were you surprised that we seem on track to maybe a 9-0 ruling?
Listen, 9-0 would be a slight surprise for me because Justice Sotomayor was still pretty critical. You know, and it seems like she does not think Colorado did a terrible thing the way that they did it. So we'll see. I think the chief is going to want to write something that's narrow enough that you do get 9 votes because I think he wants to speak with one voice on this thing. But I wasn't surprised yesterday. I thought if they're really just looking at this as a legal issue and not political, I do think you're in the range of 8-1, 9-0.
All right, Shannon, I look forward to when do you think we're going to get this verdict?
You know what? I think it's a matter of days. They either yesterday or today, they had their private conference where they would vote on it, and then you assign the opinions and start writing. But I think because this thing happened so quickly, you'll get it within days or weeks, not months.
What about the immunity? Well, when are we going to find out if the Supreme Court is going to take the immunity appeal?
So, listen, the Trump team has until Monday to either file for a stay at the Supreme Court on that losing immunity decision or actually appeal the decision to the Supreme Court. That's the only thing that would sort of stop the clock. If they don't do that, then that lower court case is back in action. Judge Chutkan, it's back on. But if the Supreme Court decides to get involved, that really slows everything down by weeks or months and pushes things really much further along in the election calendar.
And that will probably be the best thing for the Trump campaign.
That would be their best case scenario.
All right. She is Shannon Bream. We're going to be watching a Fox News Sunday because we're going to check our local listings.
I'll see you Saturday night first.
All right. Go get him, Shannon. Back in a moment. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Remember to check out Brian's show, One Nation, Saturdays at 9 p.m. Eastern on Fox News Channel. If you already have plans, set up that DVR and watch when you get home. That's One Nation, Saturdays at 9 p.m. Eastern on Fox News Channel. Be there. The The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
The daily average is under 10 a day. It shows that deterrence can achieve results at decreasing illegal immigration. The only reason why it's not happening is because the President of the United States is not enforcing the laws that are already on the books. He does not need more laws. He has the tools in his toolbox to do exactly what Texas is doing, and that's to deny illegal entry into the country, which he is required to do by laws already passed by Congress.
So what you saw yesterday, and it was easy to get smothered by the amount of major news stories, was Governor Greg Abbott called a press conference to say, we put up the wall. We've almost got it down to zero. I put a bunch of containers, put some razor wire there, had my own National Guard do it. I told the federal government, I'll dare you to even take it down. They're not looking for that confrontation. And they said, it's gone so well, we're building more of it. And he went on to say, we've built more of the Trump wall than Trump was able to do, and the courts kept stopping him. They're doing it. And think about this, how desperate it is. It's almost like farmers doing it themselves, people showing up to say, how can I help? So he's over in Eagle Pass shutting it down at those key locations. But unless everybody does it, they're going to go to places that are more permissible, like California, like New Mexico. And I think to a degree, I think that Arizona is beginning to realize it's not partisan, that we're seeing some of that. But what it's doing is rippling effect. It's affecting crime in New York City and gives other people hope, or Republicans, that they might have a major breakthrough. Listen to Mayor Javier Villalobos. He told Fox News Digital that indeed, over in El Paso, this is a mess, but it's both parties. Because he's a Democrat, by the way, so he's got to kind of cover himself. Cut 41.
I don't trust many people at all anymore. And a lot of the times, I kind of place blame on either party. At the time that President Trump was there, they had the majority, nothing occurred. Now you have Biden, nothing is occurring until very close to the election. So I think they're just kicking the ball and trying to do whatever they can. But for the purposes of politics, not for the purposes of benefiting the American people.
Be great for someone to keep the American people in their mind. So meanwhile, I'm watching A Tale of Two Things in New York City. In New York City, we have Alvin Bragg 2 weeks after this horrible attack on two of our cops by illegal aliens. He's got an indictment from a grand jury on seven people, two of which were already in his midst, and they are now long gone. We're trying to catch up to him around the country. They're probably going to a sanctuary state like California. And then number two, you have in Nassau County, in the same state, they don't care about being politically correct. This guy who crossed through seven countries to get to ours, beats up an American Jewish person, steals their flag, they get in a fight. This guy gets prosecuted, $50,000 bail. He's still in jail right now. That's it. That's called enforcing the law, like Florida does. Brian Kilmeade Show, back in a moment.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
There's nothing that Patrick can do, in my opinion, that takes away from what I tried to accomplish in my career. And there's nothing that I did can take away from what he's trying to accomplish. I feel like all I tried to be was the best I could be. Even though I had sporting idols, I could never be Steve Young. I could never be Joe Montana. Those are the guys. I could never be Dan Marino or John Elway. These were my childhood idols, and they had incredible careers, and they put as much as they could into their career, and I really respect them for that. And I just tried to do the same thing.
So Tom Brady saying he can't compare me and Patrick Mahomes, but he's off to a similar start. Much different quarterbacks, obviously. Brady rarely ran. Mahomes is always a threat to run. They got this resourcefulness about them. They both didn't play right out of the box. Both were supposed to be Mahomes was supposed to be good, not this good. And no one expected much out of Brady as a 6th-round draft pick. But it leads to a lot of intrigue with Brock Purdy on the other side, the last pick in the draft, famously, that he's tired of hearing about. But he also showed last week that he could run, and he's an extremely bright guy. That 4 years as starter in college seems to have really helped. And the running games on both sides are going to be really effective and matter. Marshall Faulk knows all about that. Pro Football Hall of Famer, Super Bowl champ, former Indianapolis Colt, and St. Louis Rams player. Got a great support over in St. Louis still. And he's got his foundation for a drug-free world, and he's still a spokesperson there. Marshall, welcome back.
Brian, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Good, good. So how's Vegas treating you?
Vegas is good, man. It's proven to be an amazing host for the Super Bowl. It's like a match made in heaven. Like, why haven't we done this yet?
And they were always afraid of gambling, right? They were afraid of association. What changed?
They've leaned in, haven't they? That's changed.
What did they tell you about gambling when you were a player? Do you remember getting these seminars?
Stay away from it. You don't want to be associated or affiliated with anybody that's a known gambler or gamblers or bookies and stuff like that. Just stay away from it.
What are the rules now for players?
I think that now fantasy football is accepted. I mean, Brian, when I was in the league, we couldn't even play fantasy football. That was taboo. So now, I mean, players can represent gambling sites and stuff like that. But it just can't gamble on football. You can't do any of the wagering on football still.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. And also, if you give information out, that could be problematic. Yeah, you know, my running back's ankle's pretty bad. Don't expect him to do much. That could change the whole line. These guys really have to watch themselves.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt. Listen, sometimes your friends and the people around you, they're looking for little keys and little information, and you think a casual conversation is just that, and it turns into information or fodder for somebody that's gambling, that's betting on your team. So you got to be careful who you surround yourself with today's game.
So do you think the DWI of Patrick Mahomes' dad is a distraction?
I don't know how. I mean, you know, he's human. We're all human. Things happen. I don't see why. I mean, his dad doesn't have to play the game. I mean, unless Patrick's going to be affected by his father getting a DWI. Right. I don't know nobody else on the team care.
I hear you. So when you talk about the two running games, two impressive running backs, you got Pacheco and you got McCaffrey. What does Marshall Faulk think first of McCaffrey?
Can I say this first, Brian? Do you understand, like, all these weeks of the NFL, we never talk about running backs. And now we get down to the Super Bowl, and it's time to talk running backs. Isn't that great? I love it. I just love it. Listen, two dynamic guys. They're different. They're a little different in the sense that Isaiah Pacheco is a complement to what they do, and Christian McCaffrey is a centerpiece for what the 49ers do. But all in all, you have guys that are reliable. They can play all three downs. They can run the ball inside, outside, catch, and pass block, which is, you know, when I played the game, was something that I wanted to do. I always tell people the best ability is availability, and if you can be available at all times, your team is going to be able to depend and rely on you.
Do you think it's a phase of the game and the style of game that the running backs are diminished? You'd never see two back sets. You don't hear about the fullback and halfback like you did in the 80s and maybe 70s. Do you think there's just a phase? Do you think running backs are pretty much going to be different from here on in?
Well, I think the position is just looked at as different. And all throughout the game, teams, they find ways that when guys get hurt, you continue to play and you're expected to win. It's almost starting to happen with quarterbacks as well. But the running back position, most teams, instead of having one dynamic guy, they're going to have two and three guys that do a bunch of stuff. So you always have the next man up mentality. The position is still important. They're just finding ways of getting it done with more than just one guy. And I'm gonna tell you, when you remove the two pieces that we're talking about from the respective teams, there's some loss. There's a little difference when they're not in there. But what the teams have figured out is how do you keep it going when those guys are dinged up or you give them a break. They figured out how to keep it going.
Right, and last thing on the game, what about your prediction?
It's just hard to go against Patrick Mahomes. You know, it's like, oh, you know what? He hadn't won a playoff game on the road. He goes to Buffalo and wins. Oh, man, he hadn't beaten the defense like Baltimore. He goes to Baltimore and wins. Here's what I can't figure out. I can't figure out how do you beat Patrick Mahomes without your quarterback outplaying him. Mm-hmm. And I just don't see Brock Purdy outplaying Patrick Mahomes. I just don't see it. I can't lie.
So, okay, so you think it's going to be the Chiefs?
Kansas City, yeah. Yep.
So in a time in which, since you started this program with the Drug-Free World Foundation, this thing, something has changed. I mean, pot is now legal now. People are talking about micro-dosing of mushrooms. Other people talk about the benefits of psychedelic mushrooms. How has that changed your message?
It hasn't. It hasn't, because I'm all education. And for people who think that, for people who are hearing that, that's all I'm saying is this here, Brian, because I've never told people not to do drugs. I say educate yourself if you choose to. If you choose to partake, here's where you go, drugfreeworld.org. Get the information and education about what you're going to partake in and make a smart decision. And for kids, because we're losing a lot of kids because they want to have the experiment or the experience of what somebody told them that it feels good. Fentanyl is everywhere. That experience, it can kill you. It can kill you. I just want people to be educated on what they do.
I understand. So where do you go?
Drugfreeworld.org. Drugfreeworld.org is where you go to get the education and the information. We have educator kits. We have classes you can take. We have everything. And here's the best part about it. People, it's free. It is free. You do not have to pay for it.
Got it. All right, Marshall, stay safe. Great to hear from you again. Thanks so much for joining us.
Likewise, man. Take care.
You got it. Marshall Faulk. So when we come back, we got a few more minutes. We'll be able to take some calls and final thoughts about where we're going now. And do you think that they're having a meeting of the minds on the Democratic Party saying we got to make a change? This report's going to be impossible to shake. And I think so far we're looking at President Trump. I think he's doing a smart thing, laying out. Let Joe Biden be the story. It works to your benefit. You'll listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
What a challenge. You know, you got Mahomes and what he does and their team. They're special, man. They're winners. You know, they've proven that over however many years he's been there. So for us to be able to go back and play them is going to be sweet. It's going to be special for all of us. And, you know, I wasn't here, obviously, in 19, but from just like you could just tell the guys that have been here, like, if anybody, it'd be special for them to play these guys. So I'm excited to be a part of it.
So that's Brock Purdy. Tired of doing interviews, obviously. So he is done now. It's about 48 hours. You focus on the game. You've heard from both teams. They are not anywhere near the strip. They're away from the strip. They're not hanging out there. So they pick their spots. These guys aren't going to get caught doing anything compromising. I think those days are over. So we'll keep you up to date on what's happening with that game. Next year, we'll definitely be there. New Orleans is another great site to host the Super Bowl, and we will actually be there for that game. I can't tell you who's in the game yet, but the good news is nobody can. So we'll see this game play out. And I think I've been hard-pressed to find anyone who doesn't think it's going to be a fantastic contest. Meanwhile, Joe Biden had an opportunity about 4 o'clock Eastern time, 2 hours before game time, to sit down in front of maybe 50 million people, and he turned it down. Why would he turn it down? Perhaps because he knew this was coming out. Perhaps because he knew that he's making a lot of mistakes lately and his people didn't want to put him forward. But to me, Gayle King interviewing President Biden, he'd have a couple of tougher questions. But if you're not capable of answering anything, you clearly can't be president. But if you are running for office, why would you turn down an audience that big? Clearly, Joe Biden was spinning yesterday. He came out, and I haven't gotten a good explanation yet. We assume it was on his insistence to give a press conference after that damning report that said the only reason he wasn't going to be prosecuted is because he's so forgetful and aged that he'll be too sympathetic for a jury. So listen to this question and listen to the angry answer. Cut 6.
First of all, what I would have done is overseeing the transfer of the material that was in my office, in my offices. I should have done that. If I go back, I didn't have the responsibility to that. That was my staff was supposed to do that, and they referenced that in the report. And my staff did not do it in the way that, for example, I didn't know how half the boxes got in my garage until I found out staff gathered them up, put them together, and took them to the garage in my home. And all the stuff that was in my home was in filing cabinets that were either locked or able to be locked. It was in my house. It wasn't out in, like, in Mar-a-Lago, in a public place where, and none of it was high classified. Didn't have any of that red stuff on it. You know what I mean? Around the corners? None of that.
There was so much more than red stuff. Have you seen the pictures? The pictures are everywhere, and the boxes are so frayed and old, they could not even pick them up from the handles. They had to take them out piece by piece. 7 million documents, text messages, and emails, but physical documents. So they did this over countless days in 147 separate interviews, two of which was the President of the United States. What I think is overlooked through all this, people are focused on when they said no conviction. They love that, does the White House. And then they say, well, he's too diminished, essentially, with the terrible memory. In order to convict, he'd be too sympathetic to a jury. People are stuck on that. You know what I'm stuck on? Over the course of decades, he was taking classified documents home, somehow beating the SCIF security, and just having them haphazardly everywhere. Remember, his lawyer found him in the University of Pennsylvania. They found thousands, millions of documents in the University of Delaware. Then they find him in both his homes, his garage, and his attic. That, to me, is unbelievable. Do you know that some of these classified documents are related to human services? These are human assets in the field laying out. They talk about his staff having to come in after he does a session or a study session, a reading session, and the stuff is just laying around the house when he was vice president. Isn't that indicative that this guy can't do the job? Doesn't he have proper respect for the job? It'd be different if it's your first term. But this guy's been doing the same thing since he was 29. He went out of his way to say a big distinction between him and Trump. Cut five.
I was especially pleased to see special counsel make clear the stark distinction and difference between this case and Mr. Trump's case. The special counsel wrote, and I quote, several material distinctions between Mr. Trump's case and Mr. Biden's are clear, continuing to quote, most notably, after giving multiple chances to return classified documents to avoid prosecution, Mr. Trump allegedly did the opposite. According to the indictment, he not only refused to return the documents for many months, he also obstructed justice by enlisting others to destroy evidence and then to lie about it.
Okay.
In contrast, went on to say Mr. Biden turned in classified documents to the National Archives and the Department of Justice, consented to the search of multiple locations, including his home, sat for a voluntary interview, and in other ways cooperated with the investigation, end of quote.
All right. Little problem with that. Not true. Number one, what happened with Trump is Trump is being litigated. People are talking about it. He says that he was in talks to move the stuff out. He was holding on to some of it. I don't know why he didn't just do it. Why create more problems when you know running for president? But if, when you talk about obstruction, he said there is a recording of him saying to his ghostwriter, look at these classified documents I have. And they took it out and read it together because this guy recorded it. When you talk about obstruction, for some reason, as soon as Robert Hur was named special prosecutor, the ghostwriter deleted his recordings, realizing he could get himself in trouble. He admitted to it. So then they reclaimed it, found a way to get it back, and they got transcripts for it. But when you have transcripts, it's a lot different than reading it, especially listening to it, especially when you hear Joe Biden speak and how he much looked better on tape and how you can swipe certain names out. Like, for example, Mitterrand was swiped out from Macron when he screwed up who the French leader was. So this happened over decades. What do you think of Trump? This happened in months. And now he's going to be indicted on this documents case. And he is indicted. But now we're going to, you know, that is in somewhat of a delay. But when he came out and said things about Trump, knowing, I would assume knowing, that he's done the same exact thing, clearly he did not help himself. And that's the point from Melissa Farah Griffin. She was on CNN. She's also on The View, but cut 14.
I don't think the president did himself any favors in that speech. He undercut two of his biggest messages. The adults are back in charge by sort of being dismissive of, yes, he was exonerated. He's not going to be convicted or tried for this. But there's some really damning pieces of information in here. He had deliberations around Afghan war plans with him. He spoke to a biographer about classified documents who didn't have clearance. This showed a decent level of reckless mishandling of classified information.
He said that he didn't.
So I think there was a dismissiveness to the seriousness of this. And then on the other hand, they were using this bizarre line to say he stepped away from an international crisis, the biggest attack on our ally Israel since the Holocaust, to go deal with a self-inflicted investigation by the Department of Justice. How is that supposed to inspire confidence?
Yes, and that was my initial point. You have an appointment to speak to Robert Hur or his hired lawyers, but yet the October 7th attacks happen, and then the aftermath. And the big fear is, will this spiral out of control? Will this be like 1973, another Yom Kippur war where all Arab nations rally like Hezbollah and Hamas did to take out Israel? And we have to sit there and reprogram and rechart all our aircraft carriers and reconfigure the push over to Asia. And it's got to happen instantly just in case Hezbollah and Hamas try to attack Israel proper all at once. Plus, our assets and our people now have to be protected because we are the aider of and the ally of Israel. And he still sits down for a 7-hour interview with Robert Hur? You don't think he could just say, hey, Robert, can't do this today. You know what's going on in the world. That's also terrible judgment, don't you think? Well, I'll talk about all that when I'm in person April 27th. I'm going to be over in Nevada, just outside Las Vegas, in Henderson. And I want you to go to briankilmeade.com and get tickets. Also, VIP opportunities, at which time, most of the time, we talk about history. It's going to be history, liberty, and laughs. And on stage, recreating great moments in our past, having a great time with things of the day, feeling better about the country. It's a red, white, and blue event. So go grab tickets. First time in Las Vegas in a long time. But I'm missing this year's Super Bowl, but I'll be back there April 27th. So hopefully everybody in the listening area, most times people go there for a vacation, so maybe half the audience will be people there just for a few days. So plan your vacation right around it. Hop in an Uber and come out to the theater. BrianKilmeade.com. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Don't forget One Nation, 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Saturday night, Fox News Channel.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.